Yeah, beginning of what I think is the appropriate way by just both talking in general terms about the topic, and also by highlighting how the material which I circulated relates to the topic. So I want both to offer a Stoic model of integrity, and I want to give examples or discussions which raise the question of how integrity relates to practice, especially how it relates to political practice. So how the Stoic model works out in practice, as far as we can tell. So the Stoic model of integrity, insofar as it's correct to use that term, is set out in the lecture on Stoics, the Stoics on integrity, which is the first of the items in the pack, as it were, my pack anyway. And what I suggested there is that the Stoics have, I'm not sure they have a term for integrity, but if they did, it would be explained by reference to four key themes that they have, four key distinctive aspects of their theory. One is the idea that happiness or flourishing, eudaimonia, in human life is identical with the development of virtue, of the virtues, which they analysed in terms of the four virtues, which they saw as interconnected. So, I mean, it's common in ancient philosophy to think about happiness in some sense in terms of virtue, but the Stoics are famous for identifying it very strongly with virtue, and for saying that virtue is the only good. Virtue is not simply the core element, but is the constituent of human happiness in their sense. Not happiness as a mood, but happiness as a state. So that's one aspect. Virtue is the only good. Another crucial aspect of their thought is that they believe that all human beings are fundamentally capable of developing towards virtue. So although this may sound like a kind of moral elitism because it's such a high ideal, they actually believe that we're all fundamentally capable of working towards this high ideal, and that it's natural for us to do that. And that's also important, I think, for their conception of integrity. They also believe that the progress of development towards virtue and thus towards happiness carries with it a fundamental shaping or reshaping of your emotional life, of your emotions and desires, so that you have a unified. They believe that in any case we have a unified psychological framework, but that virtue shapes your emotions in such a way that you no longer feel what they call the passions, misguided desires and emotions, but move towards good, that is to say, well-judged emotions and desires. And finally, they also believe that this whole process, the process of moving towards virtue, is a natural one, and that it, in some sense, or perhaps in a number of senses, it involves bringing yourself in line with nature, with how we are, as it were, meant to be according to nature. So these are general features of Stoic ethics, but they also affect, I think, the way they think about integrity, because it enables them to give an account of integrity in terms of the development of virtue, the development of virtue that then gives a foundation for decision making, which then shapes your social relations as well as your individual motives, and which shapes your whole emotional framework, the way you understand the world and think about it. Okay, so and anyway, the lecture is designed to sort of set that out, and we can talk more about that, about how the notion of integrity fits in. But yes, perhaps just briefly to say that it's hard to know exactly what integrity means, but if integrity means, on the one hand, wholeness, they have a very strong view about the kind of wholeness that virtue can confer. Stronger in certain ways than other ancient theories. Okay, so then that's one aspect. Then is what how one might in how one might relate the terms of Stoic ethics to the notion of integrity. And then the rest of the material looks at examples of it. That is to say, examples of the way in which their ethical ideal informs their writing, and informs how they think about situations that we might describe as situations of integrity. And so I've referred to a number of passages. I've included a number of illustrative passages, including some from Marcus's Meditations, 3:6, which it gives an idea of what it is to lead a life in which you take as your overall objective achieving virtue, and then other passages which indicate what the effect of this is on how you think about judgments, how you think about your relations with other people. And I've tried to give passages which I think are kind of illustrative of what we might describe as integrity. And then as well, I've given a number of passages from a range of authors which talk about virtue, again, in a way which I think indicate this wholeness, completeness, and consistency, which we might take as being an appropriate mark of integrity. And those passages, the illustrative passages, also lead into the second theme, which I want to look at, which is how integrity works out in practice, and especially in politics. And I've included a passage, 6:30, of Marcus, which is both, in a certain sense, an ideal of political integrity, and it's also an idea which brings together themes I discuss in another paper, which is what are the formative influences on Marcus, on Marcus's notion of integrity. And was he influenced in forming his ideals more by Stoic philosophy or more by social attitudes, in particular admiration for his father? And that's illustrated in 6:30, one of the passages there. I'll come back to that in a minute. The other passage I include is one from Epictetus's Discourses, which talks about how you can preserve your proper character in everything, that is, how far you can live a life of, again, in our terms, integrity, in terms of not falling below the character which for you is the appropriate way of leading a properly human life, which is a properly human life, and at what points you're going to, as Epictetus, sell yourself. What situations will lead you to sell yourself, or what extent you feel you owe it to your character not to demean yourself. And those I think provide a number of sort of interesting test cases of what we might call integrity. Then going on with this theme of the relationship of Stoic ideas of integrity and politics, I've included a paper on Marcus Aurelius' philosophy and the rest of life, and that is talking about two things in a way. Partly it's talking about what we might call sources of integrity and the relationship again between the influence of social life and social ideals of his father and of philosophy. The passage I mentioned earlier, 6:30, in a way, puts these together, but without explaining the relationship. I think for Marcus, the two came together. They weren't in contradiction. They were compatible. And that his development towards, or his self-urging towards integrity, was informed both by his idealization, if you like, of his father, and also by working towards a Stoic ideal. And then I talk about, in the later part of the paper, whether the question which has been much discussed, whether Marcus's philosophical aspirations made a difference to his work as an emperor. Was he a better or worse emperor as a result? And sometimes it's been thought on various grounds that he should have been better or more radical or more challenging or whatever. And I've suggested that in thinking about this question, we have to think about what kind of thing he would have thought as an appropriate expression of Stoic virtue in practice. And he very much saw it in terms of, as it were, doing your duty as an emperor well, not necessarily breaking the mold, but in performing the roles of an emperor in a way that was consistent with virtue as he understood this. And I think that at least gives us a context. It doesn't mean that we have to agree with his account, but it does mean it gives us an appropriate context for understanding how he felt, as he clearly, I think, does feel, that he could hold together his role as an emperor and his role as an ethical agent trying to lead a good life. But again, we can look at that in a minute. Finally, then, I've just given some sort of lecture notes on Cicero's On Duties. And apologies for the sort of, you know, slightly scrappy form of that. But what I'm trying to bring out there is, again, how Cicero's On Duties 3 was the text we were looking at in the lectures, illustrates both the Stoic conception of, you know, what one might call integrity, their view of virtue, and how it should be central to leading a human life. And secondly, I raise the question of how that ideal underpins the particular decision that Cicero finds himself making in On Duties 3. Because On Duties 3 is a very interesting work. It was written right at the end of Cicero's life. And I think it's clearly a work in which he used writing Book 3 of the On Duties, De Officiis, to help him make himself a particular decision. The decision was whether he should oppose Mark Antony, who was taking over the state after the death of Julius Caesar, whether he should risk his life in opposing someone who had great political power, but who was threatening, as Cicero saw it, any proper order, any proper political order in which people like himself, people in general, could lead a full human life, a life of virtue, as he would see it. And I think in the course of the work, and in the course of this period, 44 to 43, Cicero reached a decision, and he did oppose Antony, and he did write speeches and organized opposition to him, to Antony, even though he knew this was dangerous. In fact, he knew it could cause his death. And I think he was making his decision against the background of, and in the light of, Stoic thinking about, as he understood it, between virtue and advantages. And in the light of the Stoic view that your happiness in a sort of fundamental way lies in virtue and not in pursuing advantages, when there's any conflict, or apparent conflict, as Cicero would put it, between doing what's advantageous and doing what's virtuous. The book is all about this, and he gives various examples of this, including a very famous example of Regulus. And I think my intuition then is that Cicero, as it were, used these reflections as a way of bolstering his own commitment to what he felt was the right course of action, what one might call the course of action of integrity, even though it involved risking his life. And indeed, he lost his life. He lost his life shortly after writing the work because he was proscribed, as they charmingly put it. His name was written up, which meant you were one of the people due to be killed by the second triumvirate. So it's a real-life case of a moral decision what I think he saw as a moral decision, which cost his life. So a striking case of integrity, though, again, there are many questions you can raise about just how much it is a matter of integrity or not. Okay, I hope that's enough.